Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. Joining me is Jesse Hall. How are you, Jesse?
Victory Monday. We could take it a lot of different ways, but a win is a win. And better news on the other end of that, too. So,
yes, Packers beating the Jaguars. Almost don't believe the score, but 27-23, right? Or 27-20?
24-20.
Or 24-20. I didn't even believe they only scored 24 points.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that.
Sorry, I just, that whole game, everything about, I remember the game, folks, don't worry, but it just, the score at the end, it's a bit of a blur, but, yes, probably, honestly, well, I don't know. If they had lost the Jags, that'd really be horrible news, but, you shouldn't have expected it to be the best news, but, maybe some unexpected news on Sunday, but certainly great nonetheless. David Bakhtiari signs a 4-year extension with the Packers. Could be worth up to $105 million, and I believe just reading the $23 million average is the highest for any offensive lineman. So, we've often talked about David Bakhtiari as being one of the best left tackles in the game, and the Packers certainly paid him like one.
Yeah, I mean, he broke a lot of records, right? Highest, signing bonus money at $30 million, which they can go over the next 5 years, which is a good thing. What does it average out to? About $23, $24 million, which makes him the highest paid also and all that. Hey, he's their guy. They wanted him there. It sounds like it's going to be his career. Let's see he's going to be in Green Bay for a long time. It's extended past Aaron Rodgers, so it looks like they want him for whatever happens. We don't want to think that far ahead, that they want him to be there the first year or two for Rodgers' successor. So, hey, they paid the man. What is it going to do for our other guys? We'll see, but it had to be done. It got done.
Yes, and now, again, the big thing, talk about Sam and I basically the entire offseason, we were talking about, okay, Kenny Clark, David Bakhtiari extensions, let's go. Basically, right from when the Super Bowl ended in February, we were on that. And I know Sam had mentioned before his hesitation especially with Bakhtiari, in that the Packers don't really like paying top dollar to offensive linemen. They believe in their ability to get guys the most, that they're not going to overpay to keep anybody. But you could argue this isn't even an overpay just because Bakhtiari is that good.
Agreed. Well, I'll even go another thing. Packers don't like to pay a third contract. That's a big thing. You might get that second contract, and then, like, look at Blaga, which I hated for him this year. He just can't get on the field, but they saw something. But going back to Bach, third contract, that's a hard get in Green Bay. So they love him. And I think a lot of it has to do outside of his play on the field, which he's top two or three. You can argue all day. He's top two or three in the business. No doubt. But I think him in the locker room and what he does and everything else, that plays a big part of it. So I'm glad he's here. I'm glad he's here for the long run.
I will also say, the Packers seem like a smart, physically responsible NFL team, right? At least compared to most of them. Is that fair to say?
By far, 100%.
If they're signing this massive extension right now, halfway through the season, not even worried about, like, to me, this tells me, I read a lot into this. Maybe I'm reading too much in this. I don't think the salary cap's going down next year. I think if with the money that the Packers gave Bakhtiari, I think, because, again, the talk was before the season started, they had it worked out. I think it was, what, $25 million is the most, the absolute most the cap would drop. That was with zero games played. I think with the amount of money they've made in half a season on TV deals, I think the salary cap is safe, at least stay what it's at. I don't know if it's going to go up. Probably isn't reasonable to expect it to go up, but I think it stays right at $198 million, which I think is going to be easier for teams. And I think they already know that this far in. And that's why I think that's the only reason the Packers maybe have waited this long. Because otherwise, why is this extension not done in March? Right? If they were willing to give him this money, why not just get it done in March? I think it was the uncertainty of the cap situation next year. So I think that because the timing seemed weird to me. If they were really that worried about what the cap's going to be next year, then you figured you'd wait until the end of the season, right? Just before free agency, when you have the most knowledge. So if they're doing this halfway through the season, that tells me financially everything's fine at the NFL. At least that's how I'm reading into it. I don't know. Do you agree with that, Jesse? You think I'm crazy here?
No, you're not. First of all, NFL doesn't lose money, right? So when they did that scare, like, oh my God, the cap's going to go down. Is it really? It might not go up at the percentage that they always want, but it's not going backwards. It's not. And I think when the Packers waited and waited, and now we're in the second half of the season, and like what you're saying, I think they really, you know, all the big heads are talking. They know more than what we know. Well, now they pulled the trigger. Well, I think they pulled that trigger because we're not going to let them get to the end of the year. And they saw something. They realized, guess what? This is not going to happen. And I'll also say with it, teams make it work. Like, we always talk about the cap and, like, you know, we're not going to be in salary cap hell like the two teams playing tonight, the Vikings and the Bears. That's, I can talk crap about them all I want, but they're in salary cap hell. We're not. But you can make it work. And a lot of it is the guaranteed money and signing bonuses, and you can move monies around. They might rework Aaron Rodgers this offseason just to move money around. You can do it. It was good timing. It was weird timing. But I think it was good timing because, like you said, I think they figured out, guess what? That money's not going nowhere. It's not going backwards. I would bet the farm that it's not going backwards.
Yeah, I think at this point, again, like this, the size of this contract made it, to me, it's just, yeah, the Packers seem to have no fear. And they, again, they don't seem like an irresponsible team that's just going to blindly go into this. Right? If they don't think the cap's going down, it's because they've got really good reason to think that.
I agree, and I would not be surprised. And like the first thing I thought when I saw it, I'm like, oh, we're not going to sign Aaron Jones. In 2 or 3 weeks, I would not be surprised if they try to work something out with him. I really don't. You call me crazy. I don't know. Whatever. I'll take whatever with it. But I think they're trying to lock up their guys. And that shows a lot where people say, oh, we never sign anybody. Guess what? We're signing our own for the long term. That's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Which has always, I mean, even that was a Ted Thompson thing too, right? Maybe not the third contract, but certainly at least getting guys on the second contract. And so at least, you know, Gutekunst has done that, but maybe be a bit more aggressive going after outside free agents. Although to a certain point now, it does seem like this season is more about retaining than going after and chasing players, just because the last 2 years have been so much about chasing guys. They've kind of filled all those gaps they've needed. Now it's, we've got the team, it's try and keep as much of it as possible. I mean, I think the complication with Jones is that is he the clear third free agent after Clark and Bakhtiari, at least for the upcoming players. You know, Corey Linsley, I mean, right now they don't have a center next year. Unless, even Lucas Patrick, who you'd maybe think would, you know, if they ever let Linsley walk and wanted a center, you'd think they'd probably also want to get Lucas Patrick signed for a couple more years. So, you know, there's got to be a bit of money there too. Do they keep Kevin King? Because I don't know. Honestly, I guess Chan Sullivan did all right and has been doing all right. Maybe not. Maybe Chan Sullivan kind of plays his way into that number two role at corner, and maybe that then makes it easier to re-sign Jones. I also do wonder if Jones costs too much. Is Jamal Williams that, like, there's really barely a drop-off between the two. If they can get Jamal Williams much cheaper, I almost think that's the smarter thing. As much as I do like Jones, if there's a significant enough difference between Jones and Williams, I might prefer to just go with the cheaper guy, keep Williams, and set that money elsewhere. A defensive end? A defensive end who can stop the run consistently?
Yeah, well, that guy's not that guy's not cheap, that's for sure. Well, you said a lot right there, so I'll go backwards, I guess. We'll start with... Jamal Williams is not Aaron Jones, but yeah, when he's on the field and what he's doing this year, the drop-off hasn't been much. The guy plays hard. He brings his own juice, which we didn't have that this week. Guess what? Jamal Williams played hard. That guy played hard. He pass blocks. He does all the dirty things. Now, he's not going to break off those big runs that Jones can do. He's not going to make guys miss, but guess what? He's going to hit you every time. The guy plays hard. So, I want Aaron Jones, but at what price? That's what at what price? Where maybe you can bring back a guy like Jamal, where he's not going to break your bank, but this guy, he can, you can run with two, you know, two horses, him and you can run with two backs. So we'll see. Him and Dylan would be okay. Okay, that pass rusher, it's not going to be cheap, or that DN, it's not going to be cheap, but it'd be nice. But what you say with that too? So in free agency, you know, maybe you can't sign guys, but look at free agents this year. I can think of one that is making his team way better that was a sign, and that's DeForest Buckner, which was a trade, actually. And then they had, the Colts had to pay him, which we'll see next week. But that guy's kicking everybody's butt right now. Outside of that, who else is out there? Like, you know, everybody wants to get Snacks Harrison. Well, he's not seeing the field yet. So was that guy going to be a big change for us? Like, who are these guys that switch teams, you know, that are killing it? You don't win it. You don't win in August and May and all these times when you're signing all these guys. You're not winning then. And these guys aren't showing up. So, yeah, we get mad at the Packers when they don't pay others, but they're paying their own. So I guess it comes back to that. We're keeping the guys that we know can play, and that's our nucleus on this team. And I will go with Lindsley. The guy's playing his butt off. He's awesome. He's really good. Do we want to pay a center top in the league when look what we did with Blaga last year? We let go a really good player, and I think our line's actually better this year. I think we have his guy in the wings. We're going to trust these young players. We did a lot of things. As much as I want to keep Corey around, you don't pay that guy. I don't think you can. I think we stay cheap on the interior. We just made our left tackle the highest paid in the league. Turner's playing awesome on the other side. We go forward. Patrick, maybe you can get at a good deal, and he can play either spot. So there's a lot of moving pieces, but I think the core is there. The guys are there, and our O-line will be okay.
Because I do wonder. No, well, I mean, to be fair, I'm the one who went long and talking so many points that forced you to do that. So that's all my fault. Got you here. But I mean, and you kind of said it, right? I mean, with Bakhtiari signed, your first thought is, okay, the no Aaron Jones. My first thought was there's no way they can pay Corey Lindsley. The amount of money they're already paying Billy Turner. And maybe one guy they do keep low key, especially 2 years, straight years injured, may not be commanding that much, is Lane Taylor. And I wonder, you know, if he comes in pretty cheaply, they have their starting right guard, and then that, you know, with how good Lucas Patrick's been playing this year, maybe he earns himself a nice extension with the Packers. I almost wonder, is he almost playing too good that he outprices them? Maybe not, but if he can keep both Patrick and Taylor, you've got that interior set, Turner, you know, the O-line's there, really. It's, you know, not much difference between Lindsley to Lane Taylor, right? That's really the only difference, because we've seen Luke Patrick play center before, Lions game last year. Yeah, it's only one game. Can he do it the whole season? Maybe not, but I think Lucas Patrick's been having a really fine season this year with all the playing time.
I agree. Well, so that's one thing with Taylor. Like, okay, he's been hurt the last 2 years, but he won the starting spot in the offseason, and he got hurt. So the guys that are playing were his backup, and we're doing okay. So that says something for what this guy can be. Now, he hasn't played really in 2 years, but that says a lot that Lane Taylor is a hell of a football player. I sound like McCarthy now. Lane Taylor is a hell of a football player. Well, that might be true. So, yeah, you might get him on the cheap, and you can move Patrick to center. I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts, like I said, but I think we have a lot of good football players on the O-line.
And, I mean, we'll get to the preview now, and it's funny. Talking O-line, I thought, you know, was hearing through the broadcast, the Packers weren't really bringing the violent game, but I actually did think the O-line played pretty well. I thought there was, you know, there were times where, you know, guys were getting met in the backfield, but rarely. I mean, most of the times the running backs kind of did have space, and it was, could they gain that space quick enough more than anything? But I thought the offensive line to me on offense was the most consistent position group. Adams didn't have necessarily the greatest game. Rodgers also didn't have necessarily the greatest game. I know that the wind and that can have some effects on it, but I think offensively, I thought the O-line was the, you know, snap in, snap out, the most consistent group. Am I seeing that wrong? Do you see it differently, Jesse?
No. So first thing I want to say before all these fans say we're not built to play against physical teams, that's horse poop. We did not come with intensity, but it wasn't because we got out physical. I went back and I watched a lot of plays, and I all day long I was on Twitter watching smarter people than me show plays. The O-line actually played really good. It wasn't as exactly the most assignment shower where they did a lot of stunts and we missed blocks. So it was more execution why guys got free. We weren't getting beat up. I'll tell you that right now. You look at Jenkins. Jenkins was kicking dudes' butts. Corey Linsley looked good. Bach kept – I mean, Rodgers is clean for the most part, right? I mean, dudes did not touch Rodgers today – or yesterday, I'm sorry. But then when guys actually got free or the running game broke down, it was because of stunts and I don't know if it was communication. It was a Jaguars Super Bowl. There's a lot of other things, but it wasn't because we were out physical. And I agree with you. Like, when people say we can't beat physical teams, that's not the problem. That was not it. That's bull crap. And that's the last I'll bring that up.
But
yeah,
I can maybe get that argument on the defense just because we've seen Swiss cheese defense enough that, like, you can kind of make that argument. But no, I would never make that argument about the offensive line.
And I agree. Because it wasn't that. Like, you want to talk about what Preston Smith did yesterday? Yeah, he got physically dominated. We'll get on that side. But our O-line, it just seemed like they were missing calls and, like, some guys got free. Outside of that, it was good enough to win. And, yeah, the running game, yeah, we didn't get out there in space and didn't get plays. I blame it more on the play calling, which we'll get in that if you want to right now too, but it just seems like we did such a vanilla game plan that what did you expect? We ran into a loaded box right up the middle. We didn't do the motions we wanted to do even before Irvin got hurt. We weren't doing different things. So it was very like high school vanilla, and we played an NFL team that didn't buy into any of the crap we were trying to sell. So it was a tough, you can't put a hat on a hat all day long when guys are going to come free. And that's not the O-line's fault.
Yeah, that's a good point there. Maybe, you know, times to make those plays, you know, not necessarily helping the offensive line out with play calling. And I did feel like, you know, Jaguars played a heck of a game on defense throughout every position group. No one was giving up on plays. And you know, there were times when, you know, you'd have Bakhtiari or Jenkins, you know, 5, 6, 7 yards past the line of scrimmage. But if there's, you know, if there's a penetration anywhere else, the runner's getting stopped, right? So, you know, individual offensive line excellence. I thought we saw it the entire game on the left side, both of them. Bakhtiari, first game back, he had the hold on, was it the opening drive, second drive. But outside of that, I mean, he was as we expect David Bakhtiari to be, so totally worthy of the $100 million contract he just signed. And I mean, Jenkins looks like he's not that far off of getting paid, you know, year two of his rookie deal. So there's still a couple more years before that, thankfully for cap reasons, but you know, that's another guy that's going to command big bucks.
I mean, they're putting dudes on the ground. Like what you're saying, like when you go back at the replays, they were putting dudes on the ground. Like they were kicking butt. And, so I will go with the ref, like some of the holding calls, they haven't called holding all year. Like it's been really refreshing this year. The NFL is not calling holding calls. And then all of a sudden there's like phantom holding calls. Yeah, there was one bad one. And then like the Billy Turner, like chop block, like what? Like I get it. Yeah. Like there's an engaged guy, but like he got tossed into him. It's like, you're good. Wow. Like that was mind-boggling. I get the rule, but wow.
I will say it's not the only time I've seen like a player getting pushed into another player and that's what causes the penalty. Like so it's not totally unprecedented, but yeah, it was, yeah, maybe not the...
No, I get the rule. Yeah, I get the rule with it because it's an engaged
tough guy. It's a tough one.
But yeah, just bad timing. Like it's like, oh my God, what do you do with that? You can't. You can't do anything. So... O-line played fine. I guess that's where we're getting to. We're going the long way around. The O-line played fine.
Yeah, and I think problems on offense were, you know, I thought the running backs, like it did seem like Jones was a little hesitant when running. Like he wasn't quite bursting right away. Like, it just not like we usually see him, but there were some runs where you still saw it. So maybe, you know, but yeah, you mentioned it. Jamal Williams looked great. I mean, he looked like he had the better burst than Jones did. And there's going to be games like that. And I think to Matt LaFleur's credit, he did start to, you know, play Williams a bit more than Jones. Jones still ended up with more snaps at the end of the game. But at least, especially I thought that second quarter, you saw a lot of Williams seem like more than Jones at that point. So, Rodgers played pretty decent. I know wind conditions are tough. But man, that interception he threw, that was brutal. Okay. And I was going to say, like, that's got to be one of it, like, clearly not open and, you know, underthrown. I think that the way that play was supposed to be designed, there was supposed to be a rub route somewhere. Like, Valdes-Scantling was supposed to be open, but he still wasn't open. Like, I don't know. Rodgers, you know, what we talked about over the last few years, the trust in the Matt LaFleur play call, you know, trust that this play is going to get guys open. You know, a little too much trust there in that one, I think. Being too sure of yourself that it was going to work almost. Obviously, I don't think he was quite as cocky as he was in the Tampa game. he really did let everyone know when he ran that touchdown in, but you know, it just seemed like that interception was really bad. It's funny, he's only had three picks this year, and all of them, one of them was a off of Adams' hands tip ball. Like, you can't blame Rodgers on that one. Like, he put the ball right where he needed to be, but the other two have been absolutely brutal, some of the worst we've ever seen him throw. It's nice that he hasn't thrown that many, but two awful ones this year.
That interception has to be the worst that I've ever seen from Aaron Rodgers. It as bad as the wind was and all these other problems and all this that happened, this and that, that had nothing to do with nothing. That was just awful. I don't even know what he was looking at. I don't understand what he was thinking there, but hey, he's human, right? He's human. But, going back to like some of the other passes that he had, like he even said the one to Tonyan early in the game, first drive, right? He had him like that. That's a pitch and catch first down every time. Excuse me. He said he threw that ball and he already like gave it like a 6 or 7 yard play on it. And the wind just took it. And that's crazy to me that's why I guess he was kind of laughing about it. Cause that ball, I wish we would have saw like a different view of it. Maybe we can look at the 22 view. I haven't looked at it. To see how that ball sailed, because he made it sound like that was like the craziest sail that he's ever done in his life. So wind is a factor, maybe, but yeah, Aaron Rodgers, you look at his numbers, they look okay. We missed a lot. We left a lot out there.
It's funny. The worst sail ever, and it just barely misses a receiver. That's kind of the Rodgers standard there. So that's a good sign.
Yeah.
but it's funny because, Rodgers, obviously the interception was horrible. I thought he played pretty well throughout. Was moving pretty well. I mean, again, the offensive line protected him so well. It was not that he, was in, needed to scramble a lot or anything. Because there were plays where, he was giving the money, or it was the ball right on the money to Adams. And I don't know, Adams, maybe... not, just the lack of focus at times. I don't even, actually, that seems insulting. It shouldn't be that, but maybe just underestimating specifically Henderson and his ability to break up plays. And Adams is a pretty strong-handed receiver, and he didn't look that on a lot of plays.
I mean, no, say it. Like, I think it was focus. I think it was maybe we looked past them again, which two home games in a row that we looked like dog crap. I mean, and I'm putting it nicely because I was saying a lot of different things, but it starts with the game plan, which that was the first, you look at some of the routes we were doing, like this team came out and it was always creative. Then this week it's like, oh, short, it's run into the right into the teeth of them and then short pass. But it wasn't even the short pass. It was like, it was a one route where we're thrown to one receiver and there was no checkdowns, and that's what blew my mind. Like a lot of these, like, oh, we're gonna give it to Adams right here no matter what, and it was like, even if it wasn't there, they were gonna force it. And that, with a quarterback like Rodgers, like we weren't even running other routes, and that was a problem right there. And then to talk about Devontae, this is the worst I've seen him play. And not talent wise, it was just a bad game, right? It's like, okay, both of those balls got punched out, but that's a strong-handed receiver that would suck it into his body and wouldn't give you that chance. That's a good receiver that's not going to switch sides with the ball when he knows there's a guy on his butt. It was just like mental errors that you're not going to see again. Mercedes Lewis, I saw on Twitter today, he's like, hey, this was a humbling win, and that's hard to say. He said that. He's like, we played like crap, and yeah, we got the victory, but holy crap, like we took an NFL team for granted. And I hope that's what it was.
Yeah, maybe Adam's worst game of his career. Certainly, I mean, at least since his rookie season when he dropped everything then too. But yeah, since he's become Devontae Adams that we know, yeah, I really that on that I think it was the second drive of the game, that third down where he had it. I mean, he had pretty decent body position, and somehow I believe it was Henderson came in and was able to punch that ball away, even though Adams really should have been able to get two hands on that football and hold it. I thought for sure it was a catch, and when it popped out, no way. And then, of course, yeah, the fumble was very costly. Oh, man, Miles Jack running down the sideline after recovering a fumble. I almost flash back to the 2017 AFC Championship game there, and he didn't score there either technically, but that's because they blew it dead. Luckily, Bakhtiari with a great tackle. Actually, I was as he was, you know, Jones tried to come in, tried to recover, and actually I watched that a few times. Jones almost dove for that ball and almost got it away from Jack, and was still able to recover and be in a position to kind of tackle Jack. Although, you know, Miles Jack's pretty huge, it's tough for a running back like Jones to take him down. And you know, once he started running and going down, like, oh no, don't tell me he scores here after allowing the Keelan Cole punt return, and then Bakhtiari with a you know, maybe game saving tackle. How often does your tackle make a game saving tackle?
Well, he got paid that day, so he had to play both sides of the team. You know, he knew he got that big contract. He better make that tackle, right? So, Jack, why? The guy's so good, right? Like, we talked about it last week. Like he was covering studs. Like, that guy can cover. He can do all this. His acting career really sucks, I'll tell you that, because what he tried to do on that acting was pretty comical. For thank God they picked up that flag, because that was crazy.
I almost wondered, like, was that so bad that he might have got a flag? Like,
he should have for playing that so hard. Oh my God.
I think they ultimately just like, yeah, you're faking, whatever, move on. I mean, I was fine with him no flag there, but yeah, definitely fine with them picking up that flag.
Yeah, it went from shoulder to arm, and then he played it out for like 60 seconds. So like, dude, like, they should flag your butt for doing that, but whatever, it is what it is. But yeah, so the whole offense, like Rodgers played okay. Yeah, over 300 yards again, you know, two TDs, rushing one, which is nice. And I will give Adams, that was a big touchdown late where Rodgers way threw that way too high. That's gets guys hurt. But when it mattered, you know, he showed up. But we need Devontae to play like Devontae going forward. I guess we'll talk about the Colts later, but yeah, let's talk about MVS. He tried to drop that long touchdown, but holy crap, he mattered, right? He mattered today or yesterday.
Maybe his best game ever. Really, it just because I mean he didn't drop any, right? Like he got out every time.
He didn't.
In the interception, it wasn't really his fault. I mean, he was running his route properly. Yeah, he couldn't get separation there. That's on him, but I mean, that was never a ball where he was going to be able to catch it, probably. Especially not him. You know him wide open, he would have dropped that one. But in a game where the big play didn't exist for either team, he had a huge play. I think wasn't it their biggest play of the season?
Yeah, 78
yards.
In terms
of yardage?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and to the credit, that was a great throw by Rodgers.
It was great. Yeah, like I said, like when you look at the slow motion, he almost tried to drop it, and then the ref tried to help out there and all that good stuff, even though that's the Jags pushing him. But you take that out, he still had three other catches for over 20 yards of reception that mattered. They mattered. That big third down where he found a soft spot in the zone, that's a big play. Like, he showed up when we needed someone to show up. And you get Lazard back, this matters. This really matters. And he had a great game. Like, I tip my hat to him. Good for him. That kid needed it. It with all the drops, like when we're joking about, he didn't even drop one today. Like, that's funny. But at the same time, it's like, well, maybe it's a good time where we don't need drops, you know? So especially in bad weather, the dude caught the football.
You know, not so much wet conditions, but this is the one where, you know, the game where you'd maybe forgive him all the drop, but the wind caught it. Like, you'd be able to write excuses for it. It's, and you know, he came up even stronger than normal. So, you know, great for Valdes-Scantling to really flip the narrative there. And I mean, he looked like the number one receiver for the Packers.
Sure did. My brother always talks about other receivers that he really likes and all this and all that. I'm like, hey, MVS, he was the man this weekend, you know. So, yeah, good for him going forward. And he doesn't need to have these crazy games with, you know, four catches, 140 yards. But if he has two or three plays a game that are splash plays or at big times, hey, third down, we need that big play, and he can be trusted, especially as a third option, maybe, or fourth option, even with Lazard coming back, that's huge. That's when our offense is going to be at its apex.
So the Jags offensively, really, I mean, Keelan Cole, very incredible. And, I gotta say, like, you know, for the Jaguars to kind of A, have a lead for most of that, but B, like, I thought they played pretty well on offense, considering how well the Packers played on defense. I thought we'll get to that in a sec, but like even the Jake Luton touchdown, I mean, he threw that. That was a very Aaron Rodgers tight window-esque throw, where you throw it between four people, perfectly timed, right in the right spot. Like, that's so hard to defend, and so really well, good execution, Jaguars part. But, you know, James Robinson, running back against the Packers, 100 yards, ho-hum, big surprise. But I thought the run defense did a great job limiting the big play. He had a 20-yard run, and that was it. And that was and I think that was, what, was that on their opening drive where they got the field goal, I think? Or it was early. And I mean, you already referenced his name, Preston Smith, who was my Packers player of the game the week before against the 49ers. Especially early, really struggled in that. I think that was a run where he could have, you know, he had him within his grasp, and he wasn't quite off the block. I remember it now. He wasn't quite off the block, but enough off the block where he should have been able to at least hold up Robinson, and he just blew right by him. But outside of that long run, they did a really good job containing. So maybe they don't need that defensive end I've been clamoring for.
Well, I mean, it'd be nice. It'd be a nice problem to have, right? So, yeah, they gave up a 100-yard rusher again. But like you said, in a close game, you know, outside of one run, nothing was sexy. He wasn't like just – it wasn't like the Delvin Cook where, like, he was gashing us. It was just, okay, he had a big run, and then it was 4 yards here, 4 yards there.
Exactly 4 yards, basically. 23 – so it was 23 carries for 109 yards. You take out the 20-yard run, you know, 22 carries for – 89 yards, that's barely over 4 yards a carry. I think I counted it as like 4.04 yards a carry, right? So you're talking average.
Yeah, very average. And then they threw for 159 yards. So we held them under 300 yards offense, and they had one offensive touchdown. We can't, yeah, everybody's going to complain about the defense, and they did this and that, and it wasn't sexy. And oh my God, why do we only send three or four rushers? Because that blows my mind. Don't get me started. But outside of that, the defense did what – the defense won this football game. Let's be honest. The defense won this football game, especially with two corners out, our starting two corners out. They missed a few passes, but so did we. But I thought the defense played well enough. Kenny Clark played awesome.
Yes, I was going to mention that. He's – this is definitely his best game since getting hurt. I think the first – you know – and really, that was game one, wasn't it? He got hurt week one. And I think we were against the Vikings. Yeah, we were talking about that. I remember now. The first quarter was kind of slow for him. That second quarter, he was really coming on strong. This might be... This wasn't as good as that second quarter, but it's probably better than that first quarter. So you could, you know, for a large stretch of this game, he played better than he has. You know, not... I mean, there's a couple times where one-on-one, he was getting beat. I know that the center... it seems like they were, you know, this Jaguars center was giving him a few problems where he was able to push him back one-on-one, but it seems like anytime he was lined up against a guard, and they did kind of try and push him more as a defensive end, and it seemed like they found some success with Pettin instead of using him as the nose tackle, as the defensive end, maybe to kind of get him going a little more. There were times where he was commanding double teams, and it helped get, you know, guys like Za'Darius Smith, who he had a great game, I thought. Not last week, but two weeks ago against the Vikings. Za'Darius, not the greatest game on his part. So nice to see him rebound. I was going to say against, I guess this technically this Jags team is worse than the 49ers team in terms of record, but thought he did play pretty well there too. As you've mentioned, the corners being out, I thought Shannon Sullivan was really fantastic. I mean, did he allow one catch, maybe two receptions? There were times where he was lined up with DJ Chark. So good on Sullivan.
Everything was contested by him too. So like, yeah, he gave up some plays, but it was all contested. So yeah, he played great.
And great on the outside. I guess that was, you know, why they've just slot. It seems like they always want him to play in the nickel and have been kind of hesitant to play him on the outside, but no fear now. And I mean, Josh Jackson, he had a really good rebound game. I think I dogged him quite a bit for his performance last week, but he did. I don't even think he allowed a reception in coverage, which maybe that's, you know, not looking that particular direction, but it seemed like he played pretty fine. He didn't let anyone get wide open. That was good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care who you play. You know, you hold a quarterback in this day and age in the NFL under 200 yards. I don't care if he's a rookie six-round pick or if he's a Pro Bowler. Like, that's an okay game. Kenny Clark wrecked guys on the inside. Z played pretty good. My only problem, again, was Mike Pettin. And, like, you got this young quarterback who showed you last week that if you send pressure and you get in his face, he struggles. And we didn't do it. Like, it's like we played so passive and just did not want to, like, take any kind of – which – take a risk. Make that kid beat you, right? And he did not send any pressure. And like you look at the Packers stats where we send 3 and 4, it's not good. And that's what he did all day long. Like, and just, I don't know. It was just a terrible freaking design on that part where we did not do any pressure. And yeah, Preston Smith, awful. Like the effort on some of the plays are awful. So if you take Preston out of it, you're sending two guys and Kenny's doing his thing and then Z's doing his thing and then we're dropping essentially 7 in coverage, which they did okay, but I just don't understand that scheme. And well, they said LaFleur took that timeout basically to say, hey, we're sending more on this play. And now I don't know how true that is, but when that's kind of brought up where you said, hey, put some pressure on them, guess what? It worked.
I do wonder if, again, you know, with both Alexander and King, I mean, maybe less Alexander, but it seemed like with King, it was really, you know, game time decision. And I almost wonder if that was an extra panic. They weren't really sure how they were going to trust Jackson and Sullivan alone, so we'll send extra DBs back there. I could kind of get the logic behind it, but, I mean, if you want to help your corners out, I agree with you, Jesse. Just send more pressure. That's probably going to help them more than an extra defensive back.
Right. I mean, when we actually did pressure him, look what Luton was doing. He was throwing the ball up for grabs. Like, I mean, when you pressure young quarterbacks, what happens? They make bad decisions. So, yeah, you want to help your secondary, go after him. So not every time. And that's what I'm saying. But I was from Pettin from year one to now, he's gotten so much more conservative where you have so much better players. Why don't you trust him? And that's so weird to me. And again, I'm a armchair quarterback. We're talking on Monday, but it seems like you're getting questioned by all these talking heads. The head coach took a timeout and then you guys kind of change what you're going to do. It's kind of like, what's going on there? I just don't understand the bend but don't break crap where let's be aggressive.
Yeah, and I mean, next week they're going to play a veteran quarterback, one of the most veteran quarterbacks that they have faced this year.
Packer killer, too, because you look at what Rivers has done to us. Oh, my God, I don't even want to talk about that. He's killed us.
And the Colts themselves have also been kind of a tricky team too. Like, I remember a couple years ago, a loss led by Andrew Luck. So it's kind of a combination of both. Like, there's a couple demons here to exercise that we'll get into the preview episode next time. But yeah, you do get the sense that they're going to have to kind of start, you know, sending blitzing more. Maybe that means putting Gary on the field more and sending him alongside both Smiths, playing with only one inside linebacker. Now, the Christian Kirksey, I think that was the other thing we could talk about. I thought he came back and he looked like he hadn't missed a snap. Like, it, you know, just plugged him in and he looked just as fine as he was before he got injured. So,
looked really good too. Like, he's fast, he's explosive. If that running back doesn't pick up that blitz, well, it's probably a good thing, because it'd probably be a flag, because he would have hit Luton so hard they would have called the flag anyway.
Yeah, Martin hasn't been used to being pass rusher. He's used to, he can hit a guy because he has the ball as hard as he wants because it's a running back. But yeah, quarterback's a little different.
We haven't seen linebackers shoot through that on a blitz up the middle in so long. It was like, oh my God, like, the snap was there and he was in the backfield. Like, it was impressive. So, the skills there, we just, again, you know, play your best football late. So I don't know, maybe there's like a grand scheme where we didn't want to show a lot, and next week, we could argue is probably our best opponent we're going to see before the playoffs. So they just thought, hey, we're going to play, you know, straight up football, and we're going to beat them with our best. I don't know. But yeah, there, it was a pretty vanilla game plan all around.
I mean, and I guess this might be a hot take because they're literally coming off a loss to them, but I still think the Titans are a better team than the Colts, but we're going to find out.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm up in the air on that. The Colts run hot and cold, but I mean, the Titans do, but who knows? Yeah. Good. Yeah, that's good. They're very evenly matched.
Yeah, no, we're going to play both, so we're going to hopefully we beat both, so it won't even matter. There won't really be a debate there. I guess that'll maintain the debate, because I guess if they lost to one and beat the other, then it's really clear and obvious. So hoping that it's a close debate because they beat them both. Not a close debate because they lost to both, but you know, strong run games on both teams, so yeah, I think will be a challenge. One thing I wanted to mention briefly, we don't really talk about special teams too often. I guess we'll only talk about it now because it failed so miserably. I mean, you know, you're punting with the wind at your back, and you oversail it, and it suddenly gives the runner all the room he needs. Yeah, it wasn't the really poor tackling attempt by J.K. Scott, but overall,
yeah.
Watching that playback, there was maybe number 34 who was a little too passive in terms of, he needed to kind of hit that hole better and force the issue with Cole and really force him to cut to the outside. Instead, he kind of laid back, let Cole kind of run in, fake that he was going to go right, and able to get left. Like, he really, you know, that was maybe the one player on that special teams play that really needed to not be so passive and get right after the guy. Because he wasn't alone, he had help around. So you need to, I thought 34, whoever that was, really needed to, maybe he was the only guy that could have at least forced Cole to slow up. But, he, you know, just straight in stride, right through massive gaps. So it's, you know, special teams has been a pretty good unit, so it's just the perfect play call by the Jag special team, and the scenario with the wind and how much space Cole had. I'm thinking more fluke than anything, but do you think it's a sign of a bad problem?
No, so you look at that play. First of all, I'm going to say both special teams punters were really good. How many punts were inside the 20 on both sides? So hats off to those jokers. We never say anything about punters. They both punted the hell out of the ball. good for that. But on that play, so yeah, we had Jamal Williams. It looks like he got blocked in the back coming up, which not hard, but enough. He like sat down in that. And then we had five guys basically with no lane integrity all in the same area. It was just a big crap sandwich from the beginning. And if you could run a five forty, you were going to score there. And you juked out a tall punter. I mean, it was just the second he caught the ball, I told my buddy, I'm like, he's going to score. And he did. It was just that bad. So I just think it was a bad play. I don't think it's something to worry about, because knock on wood, Our special teams has been pretty good all year, so that's not something I'm going to worry about. They're going to clean that up. They asked LaFleur about it too. Like, hey, you're bringing up all these practice squad players because of all this crap. Do you think that's a problem? He's like, no, that's an excuse. So I don't anticipate that being a long-term problem. Now, next week, if it happens again, yeah, we'll revisit this.
I mean, it looked like J.K. Scott was going to be the Packers player of the game for a bit until the punt return touchdown. So, Packers player of the game this week, I thought was actually maybe one of the hardest ones in terms of my decision. I think I know what I want to say, but I'm still not even fully certain what I'm about to say. So it'd be an adventure for everyone. I actually was going to hope to get your input here. I've got two guys that really come to mind. So the first one to me is Elgton Jenkins. You could even say Bakhtiari. You could basically pick either of them. I thought both just dominant the entire time. There was a few times, like you mentioned, stunts really fooled, but I feel like that happened more on the right side. Turner and Patrick getting fooled, or Lindsley and Patrick. But because there's a couple plays where I saw Jenkins, like, not that he was double teaming, but he would, you know, whoever was rushing to Bach, he would chip in and then still be able to block his own guy. I noticed that two or three times where, you know, maybe helping Bakhtiari out just a slight little bit in his first game back. And then, there were times when you could, you know, either Bach or Jenkins, like I mentioned, 5, 6, 7 yards past the line of scrimmage. Like, they've got their guy beat. They're out in space. They're ready. And it's, you know, when runs aren't working, it's the rest of the line not working. But I thought, you know, there's a lot of weeks where you could give it to Jenkins, but I thought this was one where he really separated.
Two times, you're gonna give him two times, huh? A guard, I like it.
I don't think I've named Jenkins player of the game yet, unfortunately, which is weird because he's almost played at that caliber. I remember I gave it to Billy Turner the one game.
That's right. You're right.
And again, that was, man, him playing left tackle. We didn't expect it to do that well, and he did. Can't remember what game that was. I think that was the Texans game.
Yeah, Texas game, yeah, where we thought Jenkins might kick out, and he went over there, yeah.
With that in mind, you brought up a good point earlier, though. The defense really did win the game for the Packers. Like, they were, you know, between the offense and defensive units overall, the defense were probably the better ones. So do you give the player of the game to a defensive player? I mean, to me, it's obvious, Adrian Amos. I mean, I mentioned it in the preview, I think, is that something that, you know, to sell out and stop the run against Jacksonville, is he going to be played more as a box safety and come in? And he didn't really. I know Savage barely missed the game. He ended up playing 95% of the snaps. You'd have to leave for a little bit, but it did seem like they were playing Amos more behind, but he still came in. I remember one play, he came in and tackle for loss in the backfield. So, you know, run game has been great. Amos gets the interception, his first turnover of the year. I know he did have the fumble recovery, but the fumble was forced by someone else. Or did he? No, yeah, he recovered. But, you know, they give it to the forced fumble as the turnover. So technically his first turnover of the year. But I thought Amos played a great game, considering, again, how the secondary was a bit shorthanded without the top two corners. So between Jenkins and Amos, which direction would you lean, Jesse?
I would have went with two other players, but with those two, I'd go with Amos. I think he's been stacking successes, and he was a leader yesterday. So I would give a shout out to MVS, which I thought without his presence, we might not have won that football game. And that fourth quarter, Rashawn Gary that we saw, that's why we drafted him that high, because that guy, when we needed him, made plays, was in the backfield, was the killer.
But I would give it to Amos. If I got a pick, I would give it to Amos.
Yeah, the interception, I mean, that really turned the tide, right? I mean, that's because, unfortunately, the Packers victim of a couple turnovers themselves, but were able to get that one back at a time when they really needed it. So, yeah, I was leaning Jenkins just because it seemed like just snap in, snap out, he was so dominant. But, you know, again, considering that the secondary was shorthanded, a lot more pressure on Amos this game than most, and I thought he performed admirably, maybe just as much snap in, snap out as Jenkins. So all right, so I'm gonna lean with Jesse here. I'm sure Sam's happy too, going with the defensive back, but Adrian Amos, player of the game for the Packers against the Jaguars. But you know what, you do make a good point with Valdes-Scantling. Right? No drops, coming up with some, you know, huge touchdown, huge third down receptions. Could make a solid argument for him too, actually. So yeah, maybe someone I could have maybe given a bit more credit to.
Yeah, I mean, good problems to have, right? We got to argue about who's the best player. So hopefully next time, next week, it's not a close game and we can talk about it.
yeah, hopefully. And hopefully you enjoyed this episode of the Full Press Packers pod. Reach us at FPC_Packers on Twitter. Jesse's at Hall_JHall1212. I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the Full Press Coverage app, available on Android and Apple stores for free. Get access to all the written content, all of the Full Press podcast, as well as the Full Press Radio Network. So, Jesse, final thoughts before we our next episode, which will be the Colts preview episode.
Yeah, I mean, I always say go Pack go, but I think next week's going to be a real statement game. So I am looking forward. I can't wait till next Sunday. We'll talk about it this week. But yeah, it's going to be a fun week of football, big game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, no luck here. Even the Colts with the lucky horseshoe on their logo. We'll see if the Packers could shouldn't necessarily rely on luck to get a win. And we also shouldn't rely on luck here. We rely on our good skills here. I think we do a pretty good job, don't you think?
Yes, sir.
That great positive attitude. Love that here on the Full Press Packers Pod.